Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk distribution made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. If you're approaching retirement, there's no better time to sit with Steve for an individual retirement evaluation. Each month, Steve sets aside time to meet with listeners via Skype or telephone. The specifics of retirement differ for everyone, of course, but the broad goal is to have the financial freedom to live your life in comfort. It's increasingly important to have an executable plan that grows and protects your assets. So set your time. Just go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab and then Portfolio Review. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to InvestTalk. It is the Thursday edition, January 5th, 2017. Boy, time goes by. Above average investing for the average investor is what we're all about. This is a forum, a sort of a roundtable discussion. We're here to help you gain knowledge, exchange ideas, become current or relevant investment news, talk about that stuff that's important, not about stuff that's not important. We answer questions live during the show at 4 to 5 Pacific time, Monday through Friday. And we hope to keep that keeps us relevant as to what you want to hear, what you want to know about. But I'm also going to always bring you what I think is important for you to hear. You can, and of course, you can ask your question anytime of the day. You don't have to do it live. Our answering line, the same line, 888-99-CHART, is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Today, we're going to talk about how to pay off your mortgage early and also the advisability of doing that. Should you do that? How do you decide whether to reduce your mortgage debt or invest that same money in the market? So it's going to be one of our talking points. I have that question. I present that question to myself. And I talk to clients about it all the time. So it's something that's going to be our main talking point today. I titled my market commentary on InvestTalk.com today, Fact or Fiction? And this week's economic reports will tell us a lot about the final month of the year, December of 2016. The jobs report on Friday, tomorrow, will be the headline news. 180,000 new jobs are expected. But the ISM, Institute of Supply Management for Manufacturing and New Construction Spending, were better than expected. So that's good. And today we had the ISM non-manufacturing number, so our service sector, and that came in as the same as it was last month at 57.2. Anything above 50 is pretty good, and the manufacturer was 54.7 when it was 53.2 the month before. Those are good things. The economic numbers, though, do not tell us all that is going on with the economy. However, it's a good gauge, despite the faults, it's a good gauge. And it's always the faults in the calculation of the number, how it's counted. And at least our numbers here in the U.S. are not downright falsehoods, as some many other countries do report lies. They don't, not even close to what is real. But I don't want you to also assume that they are entirely correct either, our own numbers. An article at CBSNews.com makes that point that GDP fails as a measure of well-being. Now, I don't know how important as a measure of well-being we need. That's not what the GDP actually tries to do. But to give you a sense of what they're talking about, GDP counts bad things as well as good things. For instance, if there's an earthquake and destroys a lot of houses or buildings, and they rebuild all those buildings, that rebuilding goes toward GDP, growth. So bad things can happen and causing GDP to go up. Also, GDP doesn't tell you anything about, you know, people's well-being. Are they doing fine? Or, you know, is the whole society benefiting from growth in GDP? What if the growth in GDP is confined to only, you know, the top 1% of rich people, and the rest of us, the rest 99% didn't feel any improvement in the growth of GDP? See, it doesn't count that kind of thing. And that's what the CBS article is talking about. But it wasn't designed to count that kind of thing either. It's a gauge, everybody. It's a gauge of the economy. And our economy is pretty broadly based, so most people benefit if the GDP grows. Most people do. Some more than others, obviously. But isn't that the way of the world from since the beginning of time? I like it when everybody thinks that everybody should be equally benefited by something. Why? Are we all equally talented? No. Some are a lot smarter than others. Some have much better skills. So should I get the same amount of money as a professional baseball player or football player? No. No, because we are a free society. If you can make it money doing your particular skill set, then great. That's what we do. That's what we want. Free economic choices. I like that. Now, of course, there are people that are going to be left behind. There are those people that are going to be left behind because they lack the ability. But more often than not, I see people being left behind because they lack the desire. They lack the gumption. Anyways, so GDP doesn't try to count that kind of thing, whether the society is a fair or not. It's just counting the growth of the economy. And we hope that the economy is broadly based and helps everybody when it's growing. So if you want to talk about any numbers, I'll be happy to talk about it. I read these numbers all the time, probably ad nauseum, and I bore people to death if I start talking about them. So I try not to talk about them, but I do read them. So what is on your mind? What do you want to talk about? So let's go ahead and begin the Q&A portion of the program. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
Hey, Steve, this is Robert from Indiana. Hey, I got a question on the 529 plan. So wanted to know if I open a 529 account with, say, suppose a Michigan state, but I live in Indiana and I'm in Indiana, so will I still get tax benefits in Indiana or not? I just would like to know your thoughts on that and what would you recommend. I love your show, and thanks for your time. Have a good one.
Yeah. The answer is yes. The tax benefit you get from any 529, and just so you know, what he's talking about is each state has its own 529 program based on the federal law. And that 529 program developed by the state can have restrictions by the state. There's freedom enough in the law to allow the states to have restrictions on what can be invested and so on and so forth. But the tax benefit is the same from state to state to state. And that tax benefit is you don't have to pay any capital gains on any of the growth of the 529 program when you take it out to pay for accredited college tuition and room and board. You don't have to pay any tax on the growth, no capital gains. And that's true with all the states. And I think only about 34, 35 states have 29 programs. They're not all states. But you also can be a resident in one state and buy a 529 program in another state. And that's what he is saying. I'm in this state, but I live in a different state than the 529 program that I have for my kids. That's okay. You still get the same tax deduction. I mean, not deduction, same cap treatment of no capital gains tax on any of the growth of your assets in a 529 program. Very good question, though. I can see how that would come to your mind and go, well, wait a minute. But no, it's a federal law that the states implement. How to pay off a mortgage early. I'm very much pro that. I've been pro that even with the low interest rates. I think you want to pay down your mortgage. Making extra payments reduces interest. I'm death on having a mortgage payment when you're retired living on fixed income. You do not want that. So that's going to be one of our main talking points today. Mortgage rates tumbled, snapping a 9-week rate rising streak. Maybe talk about that. Did you hear about Macy's laying off another 10,000 people, closing about 100 stores? You know, I've been kind of warning about this kind of activity for a few years now. Every so often I bring it up. And why is this happening? The big box stores are going to have problems. So we'll talk about that. And I got a couple of more, too. I don't know if we're ever getting into them. Baby boomers and the student debt problem. Baby boomers and their student debt problem. Not their kids. The baby boomers. Very interesting. And the dollar. Did you see the march up the dollar since Trump won? And did you see what happened the last couple of days? It's really taken a beating. What has that benefited everybody? What did I tell you that it would benefit? If the dollar falls, what goes up? Gold. Right? Look at gold. What did it do? So is it done falling? See, remember, it just rose really, really sharp. And it's now giving back some of those gains. How much did we give it back? I don't really know. I don't have a crystal ball, as you know. But if it's typical, it'd be about 50% of those gains. We'll see. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley. We talked on our webinar last month about the mistakes some folks make by not knowing just how much risk is built into their portfolios. And that's why we invite our listeners to take our test. It's free. It's a free risk analysis tool that can help you shed some light on your risk. It doesn't answer all the questions of your risk, but it helps. It helps you. And then we can get deeper into your holdings and try to figure out how much risk you're actually taking and how much risk you really want to take. It's free. Just go to investtalk.com. We're going to talk to Gene in North Carolina. Wants to talk about 529 program and taxes. Are you going to tell me I said something wrong, Gene?
Oh, no. I just want to add something. What you said was correct about the treatment for capital gains, that you don't pay capital gains if you use it for a
college
school.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But there are some additional benefits if the state you are living in has state income tax.
Uh-huh.
If you pick the 529 plan from your state, it's state specific. Some of the states will give you a tax deduction on the contribution that you make that year.
I see. So you're saying on the deduction on income tax.
So for example, if I make a contribution to a 529 plan in the 529 plan for North Carolina, and I pay state income tax for North Carolina, there is a line deduction where I can deduct a certain amount of money.
I wonder if that's state specific. I'm pretty sure it probably is.
Yeah. Yeah, it is state by state. So you have to check state by state.
Okay. Well, thank you.
But if I make that same contribution to a plan in California, mm-hmm. and I live in North Carolina, I can't deduct that from my North Carolina state tax.
So you have
to check each state.
Yeah. Well, in California, our income tax is like 11-12%. So it might be very important here in California. I don't remember reading, and it's a very good point, Gene, because I'm not sure. I don't even think California gives you that deduction. But, you know, maybe someone will call me up and tell me because I don't know for sure.
Yeah, it is a state-by-state thing. They're just trying to steer you to their own state plan, that's all.
Yeah, which makes sense. And Gene, thanks for the call. Thanks for the information. That was great.
You got it.
Thank
Bye.
You. Let's go to Matt in Los Cabos. How you doing, Matt?
Real good, Steve. I was calling about potash, P-O-T. Mm-hmm. I've had about a pretty good run in it.
Yep.
20% in just a few months, and I was thinking if I should maybe sell half, or what do you think about it?
Well, I can tell you that we own potash in a couple of our stock accounts, and we're keeping it. We bought it about, I don't know, 3 to 6 months ago. I can't remember exactly. And we're keeping that. And other commodity-type stocks, Matt, we're kind of holding on to those.
Mm-hmm.
But I can argue that, you know, potash went up to 1975 and then pulled back all the way down to 18, and now it's at 1876. You know, the last couple, 4 days is starting to come.
Mm-hmm.
But it has been making higher highs and higher lows since about August. I kind of want to hold on to it. I think it might at least get close to that 1975 again. I think it's going there.
Okay.
It might break through. If it gets up there and it has trouble breaking through, I might take some profit to myself. But I'll tell you this, Matt, there's never anything wrong with taking profits. Yes, you might take profits too early, but it's much better than having losses. So if you want to sell some, it can make you feel more comfortable. If you think you have too much, that's the issue. 888-992-4278. We're going to talk to Bobby in Mountain View. How you doing, Bobby?
Hey, pretty good, Steve. Love your show.
Thank you.
Just had a quick question. The market has run up quite a bit, and I was wondering if this is a good time to invest. The stock which I had in mind was Seagate Technologies. ticker symbol STX.
Okay.
Just given the market, the way it has run out, do you think it's a good time to invest in Seagate Technologies?
Well, I own one of their major competitors, so that tells you I kind of like the sphere where they are. Seagate Technologies, everybody, it's a $11.5 billion company. It manufactures hard disk drives for the enterprise, desktop, mobile, computing, and consumer electronic markets. And I like the sphere because they got beat up, the whole sphere did. I mean, Seagate a year ago was trading around $60. And then just last June, the middle of last year, it was trading at $18. And today is at $40. So, this whole sector was getting beat up, and remember, you know me, Bobby, I'm KPP Financial, my company. We would consider a value investor. We like value plus growth, but value first. And we saw a lot of value in these stocks when they're in there, in the Seagate and its main competitor when they were cheap, in the middle of June.
Sure.
And that's when we started picking them up. Now it's made a little run. I think it still has a ways to go, and they're just now turning around their sales. Okay, Seagate is. The sales were shrinking 20% for 4 or 5 quarters in a row, and the most recent quarter sales still shrinking, but now 4%. So it's now starting to turn around. I think we're going to get some growth starting this year. So I kind of like Seagate, and I like the competitor better that we own, and you notice I'm not telling you who that is. And the reason why I'm not telling you is because I would be violating the SEC rules if I did. But you might be able to guess. It's big, like Seagate.
I know. It's Western Digital, most probably. I'm just guessing.
See, now that you said it, Bobby, yes, it's Western Digital. We own Western Digital.
Okay.
For the same reasons. I like Western Digital because they have less debt than Seagate. And okay. They've turned around already, so they look a little bit better to me. Thanks for the call, Bobby. Okay. FTX was a symbol, Seagate. Western Digital symbol is WDC, everybody. So how to pay off a mortgage quicker? I've done this personally. The way I did it is I paid an extra $500 a month. A number of years ago, my second house. I'll have to say I kept my first house and rented that out. But my second house, what I did is I paid $500 extra a month. And people say, well, who has that kind of money? I didn't have that kind of money. It was very difficult years ago to make that kind of commitment. I had to make it because I had a 30-year loan due in 10 years. So it was a balloon payment. 10 years. So I figured out how much I had to pay to have it paid off in 10 years. It was $500 extra a month. But you don't have to do that. You don't have to do that. How about just paying, if you had a 30-year loan at 4%, $300,000 loan at 4%, that'd be about $1,432 a month. 30-year fixed mortgage at 4%, which is $300,000, which is not uncommon. Do you know you pay $216,000 in interest over the life of that loan? Now, if you just paid $100 extra a month, just for the whole 30 years, just $100 extra a month, instead of $216,000, you would save $29,000 in interest payment. That's a huge amount, just $100 extra a month. You could save $29,000. That's a lot of money. So paying just a little extra a month, how about $200 or $300 a month? You can knock down that loan much faster, pay much less money for the house. Now, there is the argument, well, I can get a really cheap loan. Why don't I invest the extra money instead of paying down the house? Why don't I just invest in the stock market? The answer to that is yes, it would be smarter to put it in the stock market. But that's not the whole answer. The whole answer is, can you do that? Do you have the discipline to do that? Do you even have the discipline to put extra money against the mortgage every month? And most people have a hard time with that. And then you ask them, instead of doing that, why don't you put that money in the stock market? They have a harder time than that, than the mortgage. So when I talk about human nature, I throw the human nature element into this argument, I tell you to pay down your mortgage. Because remember, the house is also an investment. It generally appreciates. So think of it in terms, I'm buying, instead of paying interest, I'll be able to collect interest simply the fact that I don't have to pay it anymore. So I am a pro, pay the house down, have it paid off before you retire. Because you're going to be on a fixed income in retirement. You don't have the ability to make more money. Maybe. Depends. Of course, everything's individual. We're heading into part two of our Thursday Invest Talk. Plenty of time to get your questions in. 888-99-CHART. We're live 4 to 5 Pacific Time.
We thank you for subscribing to our podcast. Steve and Justin encourage you to join our Invest Talk Insider program. This is a source of information in many handy forms, easy to read info sheets, recorded webinars, and even chart lessons. Everything is free. Just go to investtalk.com to sign up and click on the Invest Talk tab. Our next Invest Talk topic is for parents and grandparents. Achieving financial independence by retirement age or before is within their grasp. There's really no good reason that they can't get there. Five excuses to keep your kids from becoming millionaires. Get to know them. That's one of our talking points next time. And we're open to your talking point right now. Check in at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Eric in Southern Utah. I had a question about stock ticker symbol DRQ. That's Drillquip, Inc. It's in oil and gas-related equipment and services field. Looking at picking up a position here, wondering if you think it's a good time to get in or if I should wait for a pullback. All right, thanks so much. Goodbye.
Well, I definitely would not buy it here. This is the reason. It's Drillquip Inc., DRQ. It's out of Houston, manufactures highly engineered offshore drilling and production equipment for use in deep water and harsh environments. It's a $2.3 billion company, so it's a small cap. This is my problem. In 2015, they made $4.88. Now, that's down from $5.10 the year before. So they made $4.88, and then in 2016, they made $2.16 a share. So almost 50 to 60% cut in earnings. And then 2017, they're projected to make 60 cents a share. And that's like a 72, 75% cut in earnings. And sales are just as bad, going down 30 to 40% the last two quarters. I'm having a hard time buying a $62.80 stock with only making 60 cents a share next year. I would not buy. What kind of PE would that give you? I mean, we're talking, what, 80, 90 PE? And the five-year average PE is 10 to 30. So based on next year's earnings, the PE is going to shoot up, and I don't like that. Now, it's not. It has a good return on equity. It's not, you know, it's not a bad company, and it's still making money, but it's just too expensive. When Trump was elected, the stock was selling at 47, 48. So it went up to 65, it's now 62.80 based on his election. But fundamentally, I don't see any justification for this high price. DRQ. And if you're going to buy it anyways, you don't buy it here because it's been at this top before May and June and fell. So it's probably going to pull back again unless there's something I don't see or know about here on the quick look I could give it. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So Macy's announced that they're closing, they're laying off 10,000 people, closing more buildings, more stores. And right behind them came Kohl's. Kohl's saying that we have very weak holiday sales, or weaker than expected holiday sales. And this ties right in with my theme we've been talking about, me and Josh talking about for some time, that the big box stores are going to have a hard time in the future because of online sales. Because of, and not just because of online sales. Remember what a big box store does. It sells all different kinds of brands and products in the store. Where all these brands, these different brands, they could sell their products online directly or have a little store outlet and sell directly or have a discount outlet and a discount outlet mall or sell online without no office space at all. And this is what's happening. So the big box stores are struggling. Not just Macy's either. All of them. Not just Macy's and Kohl's. So you next question is, well, what's going to happen to the malls? People still want to go to the malls. It's an adventure. They like shopping. But the big boxes that anchor the malls are not going to stay big boxes. What's going to happen? What can happen to those big boxes? Well, they can change what they do. Maybe inside the box, there'll be kiosk outlet stores in there. Maybe they'll change those big boxes to some kind of entertainment. You know, I don't know. How about a Ferris wheel? How about roller coaster? I don't know. I'm just saying this is more evidence to tell you and I and everybody else in the world that the big box stores are struggling. So why? It's called creative destruction. Why would you invest in something that you know it's going to struggle year after year after year? Why buy in any department stores? Why? Why would you fight that trend? That's not where the growth is going to be. It could become a value trap also. Value trap meaning, well, these people have lots of property and they have land and that's valuable and, you know, they're still selling products. That's a value trap because the whole way of conducting business is the problem. That's the old way and you're not thinking about the new way, which is online sales, small stores, you know, a brand name stores, that's how the young people shop. I know that for a fact because I have a number of young people, nieces and nephews, all in their teenagers, most of them in their early teenage years. And that's how they shop. Okay, one of our resources for insiders is an info sheet about approaching retirement. Insiders, Invest Talk Insider, become one. We're going to start a new chapter in life, full with new endeavors and places to travel. May seem very appealing. However, if you're approaching retirement, you better be plan. You got to plan it. You got to have some idea of what your financial situation is going to be. Approaching retirement, an info sheet about approaching retirement. This is just one of the straightforward information sheets we supply on Insider, Invest Talk Insider. When you're ready, just go to investtalk.com. No investment required, everybody. It doesn't cost anything. And there's never, we don't spam you either. So just go to investtalk.com, look for the Insider, 888-99-CHART.
What does an InvestTalk insider know that you don't? Well, maybe something that she saw on one of the dozens or more webinars or the easy-to-read info sheets written by Steve and Justin. Why not give yourself the insider advantage? Sign up on InvestTalk.com. It's free. Just click on the InvestTalk tab.
Hi, my name's Ellen. I'm from San Bruno, and I'm calling because I'm interested in getting an index fund, which is traded, I believe, it's like sort of like a life insurance policy, and it's based on the S&P 500, and it goes up, and like, you don't lose any money, and I want to know your opinion and if you could give some information about getting one. I believe it's called an index traded fund or something, but it's like a life insurance policy. Thank you.
Okay. I think you might be talking about a whole life or a universal life policy that allows you to invest in the index, the S&P 500, and they guarantee that you will have no losses. you know, as long as you leave it there for 10 years or more, something like that. That's not unusual out there. There's some big pitfalls involved. They're very expensive as far as commissions. And when they say no losses, they mean that you can invest for 10 years and you still don't have any profits either. And they generally got to be very careful because they don't generally tell you about capital gains that's being built into the index. So it's an insurance product. So you have to go to an insurance agent, talk about life insurance, and it's universal life or whole life. Now, there may be some other investments, but everyone that I know of is an insurance product. It's a life insurance product, that, as you describe, what with no losses, but you're investing in S&P 500. They just, what they do is they just guarantee that it won't go below your initial investment, which is part of your premium you're paying. Not a whole premium, because some of it goes to the life insurance part. But part of the premium goes to the investment, and they guarantee that that will never go below whatever the S&P 500. Well, I mean, never go below your initial investment, but it's attached to the S&P 500. One of the reasons why they can do that is because almost over any 10-year period, the S&P 500 has been up, unless you have a Great Depression again. So that, I think, is what you're talking about. So you had to call an agent, an insurance agent, if that's what you want. I don't care for them, but you know, I'm okay if you do care for them. 888-99-CHART. Mortgage rates fell for the first time in 9 weeks. 9 weeks, they went up, 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 up ever since Trump was elected. Up, up, up. Mortgage rates, your 30-year mortgage rate fixed is at 4.2%. Fell 12 basis points from its high. And the 15-year fell to 3.44%. So this is the first time that they've fell. And this is the first year since 2014 that interest rates are higher, started the year at higher than 4%. Now, don't think that this raise in mortgage rates hasn't been painful. Because the Freddie Mac says that the interest rates have caused a refinancing for people to fall about 22% in their most recent weekly report from the Mortgage Bankers Association. So the refinancing is starting to dry up. Now, I will tell you, and I think I already mentioned already on this show, that you know the costs, the mortgage rates have probably come down a little bit because they've gone up too fast in too short a period of time. But I do think the trend is now going to be up, not down. You just look at what the Federal Reserve is saying. Now, I don't necessarily believe what they say because the Federal Reserve has lied to us many, many, many times. Maybe lying is too strong of a word, but they did lie to us. They said that rates were going to go up 4% about four times, not 4%, but up four times in 2016, only that went up once. They said the same thing the year before. The rates were going to go up and only went up once. And then they said this year they think the rates are going to go up three times. And the minutes that were released just recently, kind of concerns everybody, whether, you know, because what they were talking about, but they've said they're going to raise the rate three times. I don't think so. I don't think they're going to raise that many times this year. But I do think the trend is going to be higher, not lower. But just not very fast. Going to be very slow. 888-99-CHART. We're going to talk to Frank in San Mateo. How you doing, Frank?
Hi, Steve. Listen, this has been on my mind for a while. I just haven't called in to you, even though I want you to talk about Qualcomm, QCOM, a little bit.
Uh-huh.
What I'd like you to do, because I know you like to talk about disruptive technologies.
Yes, I do.
And I'd kind of like to get your feeling on what this implementation of the 5G is going to have to do. Is it going to help Qualcomm? Is it really going to increase its revenues? Because it seems to me they're really, especially with AT&T and Verizon, are really pushing the 5G, and they're going to push it faster than the regular implementation seemingly was going to do. And I just kind of wanted your feedback on that aspect, too, of the stock, if you want to.
Okay. And 5G, everybody, what Frank is referring to is the speed of downloads over wireless downloads. And the faster it is, the more seamless it is. You can watch full video. Okay. And that's really where it is. Now, he's asking, well, how would that affect Qualcomm? Well, Qualcomm has some very solid patents that, Frank, that 5G won't hurt them, but probably help them. Okay, so don't think it's going to hurt Qualcomm. The problem he has, AT&T and Verizon, they have to continually upgrade their towers and their equipment to handle the high speed. And that's where the difficulty comes in. But it doesn't really affect Qualcomm. They're not a provider of the service to people's phones. They just have the patents on the technology that is being used. Pardon me? Go ahead.
But won't Qualcomm provide the new semiconductors and all the new 5G phones? Because isn't that what they do, is provide those semiconductors?
Yeah, the other part of their business is that they design CDMA and OFDMA-based ICS and system software for the phones.
Right.
So they have to stay up with that technology, but they have a lot of the patents. And, you know, that's only going to that's going to help them, because that means they get rid of the old phones and buy new phones with their chips in them. Now, they have competition in the chips. They have competition. But they still have the leading edge. So I think it would help Qualcomm more than hurt them going to 5G.
Well, there's one other aspect, if you care. I don't want to take more time than you have, but it did. There was a statement on the fact that Qualcomm is coming out with a new microprocessor chip that can be used in data centers based on the ARM technology. And that, to me, also could have seemingly could help. Now, they're just sending it out for testing now.
Mm-hmm.
But that chip supposedly will be able to replace a lot of those Intel chips in the data centers. Have you heard anything about that?
I haven't really read anything about that. I don't doubt it, but Qualcomm is not one of the stocks that I track closely. But I wouldn't doubt that for a bit. And I really should look into that to see if it would hurt my other stocks. I mentioned earlier, we own Western Digital. I want to see, wait a minute, if they're getting involved in the data center chips, and will that help hurt, compete with Western Digital? You know, technology, Frank, you got to keep on top of it. It moves fast. But thanks for the call. I appreciate it. You're listening to InvestTalk. The invitation is always open, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. 888-99-CHART is our anytime listener line number. Why not check in now? 888-992-4278. We're going to talk to James in New York. Talks about GDX. How are you doing, James?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Well, I'm doing pretty good because I held on to my gold, and it was pretty painful, but it's now bouncing. So GDX is, of course, the gold miners index. You want to talk about that?
I wanted to follow up on it. It did pretty nice this week, beautifully today. It
just
real well. I just realistically, for a short term, I bought it. I mean, I wasn't opposed to holding it for the long term, but on a short-term basis, is it a possibility that might go up to the $30 range? Is that?
I really think it is going to go back and test that, James. I do. Right now, everybody's at 23, and it went up 10.9% this week for the week. So it's one of those things that can move really, really fast. And why did it move up? Because of the dollar. The dollar broke down. Remember, the dollar was just screaming up ever since Trump got elected, and it put a lot of downward pressure on gold. Well, the dollar weakened finally, and gold sprang back up. And now it's a question of, and James, you're right to point out, well, how far is the spring back up going to be? Is it going to go from, because it was down to what, $19 or so, 19 something, or 18, 90, and now here it is at 23. Its top was right around 30, a little bit above 30, 31, 32. And James is asking me, everybody, do I think it's going to go back to 30? And my answer would be, yeah, I think it is. Now, that's gazing into my crystal ball, James, and you know how cloudy it can be.
No, sure, I don't want to get ahead of myself either. I just thought maybe it might, you know, it might go to the $30 range again in the near term.
I think it might. You know, it's going to be dependent on that dollar. And I think reality is setting in that Trump is not going to be able to do anything and everything he wants. It's not going to be a miracle. You know, he's going to wave a wand and everything's going to get better. It's going to be a lot of hard work, you know. So I think reality is setting in a little bit. James, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Let's go
to Alish in Santa Clara. How you doing, Alish?
I'm doing good. Thanks, Steve. Thanks for taking the call.
Thank you.
My question is about the interest rates for next year.
Yes.
I saw that the Fed is planning to raise them maybe three times next year.
That's what they said.
So that's what they say. But my question is, will our new president have any direct influence or control over that? Or will he be able to influence the Fed as far as the interest rate hikes? The number of them or the quantity?
Well, they have complete control over raising the federal funds rate, but that's the only rate they control. They only control one rate. And I don't think they're going to be able to do it, Alish. I don't think they're going to raise three times. I wrote to all my clients in their annual letter. I expect the Federal Reserve to raise rates maybe one, possibly two times this year. But three times, I don't see it. They could even lower rates if the economy doesn't pick up as everybody expects it to. There's two ways we can go into recession. I don't think we are, okay? But I don't think we're going to be all that strong GDP, healthy that, you know, kind of everybody thinks is happening. I think we're going to be okay, but I don't think it's going to be anything miracle. Therefore, I don't think the Federal Reserve, unless inflation picks up to help them and the dollar continues to get stronger, which I don't, you know, it's not going to go straight up. I think long term it will be stronger. But so I really feel that they're optimistic again about how many rates raise they can do, increases in rates. So I don't think it's going to go.
Okay. My question is actually in terms of will President Trump be able to influence that at all?
Yes. Well, I think so, because in 2018, you know, Janet Yellen comes up for reappointment. And if she wants to keep her job, she's going to be, you know, the Federal Reserve is not supposed to be political, but between me, you, and a lamppost, they are political. They have the federal government, the executive branch of the government, the president, they appoint the Federal Reserve. Therefore, the Federal Reserve kind of pays attention to what they want in the form of what they want the Federal Reserve to do. So I do think there's some influence there. I don't know how much and how directed it is. Okay. Thanks, Elise. Appreciate
the call.
Thank you. All right, time is up for the hour, everybody. Reminder, I will be in San Jose on the 11th of January for individual retirement account reviews. I do have a one slot open, I believe. You can save your place on the schedule. Just go to investtalk.com, click on the Invest Talk tab, then Portfolio Review. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Justin Klein, everybody at KPP, and I, of course, want to thank you for listening today. And let's meet up again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.